And welcome to a special edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, an exclusive audio service presenting views and insight from the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. I'm Robert Graham, and sitting right across the table from me is the aforementioned Mickey Fulp. And I said, Mickey, that this is a special edition because not only are we meeting face-to-face, we don't do that too often, but you're here in Toronto for the Cambridge House Resource Investment Conference.
That's true. I have a couple of speaking engagements and a couple of interviews with you. So it's a nice, warm, early fall day in Toronto, and it's good to see your smiling face, Rob.
Okay, well, it's good to get together with you, Mickey. It's always great when we can get together when you're in Toronto. We're going to basically pick up on this show where we left off last time, and that is looking at rare earth elements and the geopolitics involved in this market. And it's a timely discussion because the latest news concerning rare earth elements has the prospect that China may have put in place an unofficial ban on exports of rare earth metals to Japan. China has said, nope, you're wrong, we haven't done that. Japanese officials apparently have not been able to confirm the report. But just the fact that this report is out there, Mickey, really highlights the political risk in this area.
Well, that's true. And as you are well aware and listeners are well aware, I'm intrigued by the geopolitics of metals markets. And most importantly, in the rare earth elements sector, because China controls at least 90% of the world production.
I was going to say, you know, if there's a metals market out there where people should really pay attention to geopolitics, it's got to be rare earth elements, because I can't think of a metals market out there anywhere where one country is such a dominant force and really controls things.
No, you might say platinum with South Africa, and we've already gone through the geopolitics of that. But this is an interesting situation, Rob. Reported in the press, a Chinese fishing trawler had an incident and ran into two Japanese Coast Guard boats. And I think there's more to it than that. It just so happens that...
Unless it was a real foggy day.
And I've never been in that part of, I guess, would be the North China Sea, so I don't know if it's foggy there or not. But there are two islands that are disputed territory between Japan and China, and it just so happens there are potential giant oil and gas reserves on these, or around these two islands. So it seems to me that's probably got something to do with it.
Of course, and we have a lot at stake here in North America when something like this happens, Mickey, because China controls rare earth elements. Rare earth elements are found in so many products that we use every day. They're key to such things as iPods, television sets, all kinds of things. The list goes on and on. How are we reacting to this here in the West, the fact that geopolitics gets in the way of a very key ingredient that we really need?
Well, in a typical American fashion, likely because you can sue anybody, and if you lose the case in the U.S., you don't have to pay his lawyer's fees. But the U.S. has come at it from a legal standpoint. We have the United Steelworkers who are threatening a lawsuit and reporting to the World Trade Organization. We have the U.S. going a political way, too, with U.S. House of Representatives initiating some actions concerning the U.N. dollar imbalance. So this is the way we have chosen to do it in the U.S. And, of course, Canada kind of gets taken along with U.S. and North America.
And that currency dispute really could have far-reaching implications, couldn't it? Because, I mean, the bottom line to this is the United States feels that China's currency is undervalued. China does not like to be backed into a corner and told what to do. How do you see this playing out? I mean, what's the wise thing to do? For the U.S. to back off a little bit and China let China take its own baby steps?
Well, I would say that'd be the wise thing to do, but I don't think the American government has ever been accused of being anything more. And I'm a patriotic American, but the biggest bully on the block. We carry the biggest stick, and we're not afraid to wield it. So the ultimate thing that could happen here would be a trade war between China and the U.S., and that would not be good for the world economy, although it might be good for rare earth elements stocks.
It could certainly have a dramatic impact on rare earth element stocks, particularly if such a dispute develops and it leads into speculation that perhaps China could just turn off the taps for rare earth elements exports. If it's controlling 90% of the world's REEs, China really has the rest of the world at its fingertips and basically can control that market.
That's true. And so the net result of that is we've seen skyrocketing prices for American and Canadian rare earth element explorers, and in the case of the big gorilla on the block, Molycorp, a producer at this point.
I'm glad you brought up Molycorp, Mickey, because Molycorp, as we both know, is the only North American producing company, I believe, right now of rare earth elements. It IPO'd not too long ago. Provide us with your assessment of how that initial public offering went and the performance of Molycorp stock since then.
Well, the IPO was, I wouldn't call it an unmitigated disaster, but it was not particularly successful. It was thought the IPO would be done something on the order of about $17 a share. It was done at about $13.50, $13.85, if memory serves, a share. It was not particularly well received on the street. It was dealt out to J.P. Morgan and Morgan Stanley, who evidently put a bunch of traders into the IPO. So the initial IPO, it dropped something on the order of 15% in the first couple of days, and that involved stop loss, then kicked in stop loss automatic trading, which drove the price down to $12.10. Since then, Molycorp has gone on a tremendous run in the last month or so, and today it closed an all-time high of $27.81, Rob.
What about the other companies out there that are exploring for this stuff and trying to find a resource of rare earth elements that is economical to develop into a working mine? Have their share prices followed kind of the same upward traction as Molycorp? And give us your assessment as to the prospect of one of these companies actually becoming the second or third developer, or rather producer of rare earth elements in North America. What are the chances of us seeing somebody else joining Molycorp over the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, I'll take the second part of that question first, and that's we're not going to see that in 2 or 3 years. We're going to see that production coming from other explorers, I would say, somewhere on the order of 5 years. So we're 5 years out. So the real concern here is security of supply for the next 3 to 5 years. Molycorp will be in production certainly within maybe a year and a half or so. But what it has done is carried the best of the juniors along with it. And I refer those as the cream of the crop. I picked four of them. If listeners are interested, they can go to my website, mercenarygeologist.com, and see my four picks. But three of those four have hit all-time highs in the last couple of days.
Much of what we've talked about, Mickey, from my vantage point, would appear to be laying the groundwork for certainly upward pressure in the price of rare earth elements. Has that in fact been the case? Have the prices of the underlying commodities gone up?
Yes, and we touched on that last week. Overall, 300%. It varies from metal to metal. But the real impetus for Molycorp's run has been the increase in prices. Now the geopolitics is kicking in. So 2 weeks ago, I said I expected upward movement in share stock prices. Well, knock on wood, I hit that bang on, and we're hitting all-time highs, and I'm extremely bullish on the prospects in the next few weeks. Now, we will have corrections in this run-up.
Sure.
This is looking like the bottom of the second, top of the third. I'd say now we're an inning later as this bubble is being blown up, and I think we got a ways to go. I would caution speculators to tread very carefully in this section. In this sector, there are very high risks involved when you have stocks hitting new highs on a daily or a weekly basis. But I'm bullish, Rob.
Okay, and I'm glad you brought up the part about be careful in this sector, because so much speculation, because it plays nicely into the program that we're going to have about a week from now, Mickey, and that is conducting due diligence. How do you find a company that is worth investing in? You, there's a lot of stuff to sift through, so we're going to end this one on that note, and we're going to pick it up on that note. A week from now, you're going to tell us how we can go about finding out a good company to sink our money into.
Well, and I'll still be in Toronto, so it's another face-to-face, and we're going to talk about doing due diligence not only in companies but commodities that you want to look at where you're evaluating companies and see if those commodities make sense.
Okay, good stuff. Let's end it on that note. Thank you very much, Mickey. That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.